Blog Talk Radio.
This is for you, Kings fans, wherever you may be. All the frustration and disappointment of the past is gone.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome back to the JewelCast. It is January 8th, 2018, and we are at the midway point of the 2017-18 season. So the Kings have hit their bye week. They've lost their last couple games, but overall, season's going pretty well. I think it's been every time we've recorded this year, the Kings have actually been on a good run, or at least been pretty optimistic about the way things were going. So that's mostly continuing, although there are some concerns to talk about. But we're kind of going to be recapping the entire season so far. So we'll have a lot of good things to talk about, too. So without further ado, tonight we have Sarah and James on the line. Sarah, James, how's everything going?
It's so cold, guys.
I am so sorry. It's raining here, if that makes it feel any better. No, I'm not. You're right. James, have we got... Good. And James, do we have you on the line?
Yeah, Happy New Year. And yeah, it's pretty cold up here in Sacramento as well. It's been raining all day, but that's a good thing for us because... that means the Sierras are getting some much-needed snow, so that'll be good for skiing and snowboarding up here. So it's a good thing. Hopefully this is the year of resolutions made real, and hopefully that will apply to the Kings as well.
That's all we can ask for. I'm looking forward to maybe hitting some slopes as well. I know that Big Bear was taking a while to get going, but the Mammoth reports have been as happy as ever on Fox Sports West. So I think I'm ready to go. But first, let's go ahead and start with just the last couple games before we get to the season at large. A few more recent developments: Jake Muzzin put on injured reserve. Appears to be more of a short-term injury, just one where we can take advantage of the bye week. But, you know, that's always what they say. So I'm just hoping that that's the case. We are dealing with, as a result, a little bit of a defensive shuffle. Christian Fullen came back from injured reserve. So there are enough bodies. It's just we had to figure out where the bodies go. Up front, it's still Jeff Carter, still no timetable for return, but the rest of the forwards are alive and kicking. So... So the team as a whole is in decent shape, although a couple concerns in recent games, mostly the period from hell against Calgary. But overall, performance has been decent recently, aside from that 20 minutes. James, thoughts on the last week or so heading into the bye week?
Yeah, it's been a very streaky season. I mean, after... you know, one of the best starts in Kings history, then they go through a period where they lose 7 out of 8, then they win 8 in a row, and then the last 11 games have been pretty 500 hockey, you know, with the Kings winning 5 out of their last 11 games. I mean, it's nothing to be alarmed about. If you were to ask us, you know, in the beginning of the season, would you expect us to be where we are now? I don't think any of us would be expecting that. You know, we should be pretty happy and shocked and positively surprised to be where we are now. You know, when we thought we didn't know that Kopitar and Brown and Gabrick even would still have NHL life left in them. You know, that was a concern. You know, after the last two seasons, but they've bounced back remarkably. One of the few concerns I have is Alex Iafallo. I know he's a rookie. It seems like he's now hit the wall after 40 games, which is the length of a college season. It seems that we loved him for his catalyst role, that extra boost that he provided to the first line, but he's now dropped off. He's been a minus in his last three or four games. He's been a minus. He's still only scored two goals, despite all the catalyst work he's done. He's only scored two goals. You know, how much more dominant would the Kings be if Iafallo scored more? I'm also a little concerned about McDermott. It seems he's fallen off after playing a very visible role in the blue line. It seems like he's started to lose his edge and cough up the puck a little more, which has cost us a bit in the last few games. So, you know, there's some concerns that arise, but it's nothing to be, you know, too alarmed about. It's part of the challenge of an 82 game season.
Sure, and I think with McDermott and Iafallo, I kind of forgot after about a month or so that they were the two, you know, the two surprises, the two that were expected to be cut for all intents and purposes and managed to claw their way onto the team, because Iafallo was definitely not the 13th best forward. McDermott, there was some argument about whether he was one of the six best defensemen on the team, but he was at least, you know, making his case to stay in the lineup and not to be sort of the every night seventh defenseman. In fact, the way Oscar Fannenberg started the season and went through camp, I would not have expected McDermott to get more games than Fannenberg had at this point. Sarah, are you concerned about Iafallo or McDermott or any of the other young players at this point?
I think for me, I'm more concerned about McDermott. Because we've always known he is what he is. He's a big guy. He doesn't skate necessarily very well, but he's basically the Matt Green replacement, or the Mike Green, replacement for him. There's so many M Greens in hockey. My brain is just mush. We weren't expecting him to come in and be new Drew Doughty, you know. But I also feel like, you know, he's making a lot more mistakes. There's been a lot more turnovers from him that are, you know, rookie mistakes from a rookie, but, you know, in a race this tight, you know, to stay, you know, on top, like, you know, we don't think that, you know, Anaheim and them are going to be bad all season. You know, we need to bank as many points as we can. You know, they're just not kind of the mistakes that we want to see, especially on a team that is so defense first. I have been surprised that Fantenberg hasn't gotten more games, because his kind of speed and playing style seems like it fits more with what the NHL is moving towards instead of large dude who hits stuff. But, you know, the Kings still kind of like having that guy around, so he is what he is. I think Iafallo I'm not quite as worried about, because I feel like for him, once he, you know, like this is, you know, as you said, kind of the point where most college seasons end. And so he, you know, physically and mentally hasn't had to push past that wall. So I think once he kind of gets over it, you know, and learns how to deal with it, he'll be a better player for it. Whether that means sending him to Ontario where he can play, you know, 16, 17, 18 minutes a night on, you know, top minutes, just to get him kind of in the groove in a less, you know, less high stakes situation, is possible, but, I really like how John Stevens talked about the decision to scratch him, and that, you know, it's more about a learning opportunity and just a chance to reset and watch the game, from up above. And, you know, Iafallo did fine in the game that he came back into after he got scratched. But I feel like at the beginning of the season when we did the preseason podcast, we all kind of said the same thing, like the Kings will probably squeak into the playoffs, but there's a very thin margin of error. They're in a good spot now, but, you know, we immediately had that Jeff Carter injury and we're like, well, there's our margin of error. It's gone now. So to see that they're still doing that without their second best, you know, their second line center, is encouraging, regardless of, you know, the fact that we're sitting here talking about like a seventh defenseman and a random surprise rookie, you know, is a good thing. You know, we're not talking about can Anje Kopitar still score goals, you know, so in broader terms, Iafallo and McDermott are kind of the least of my concerns, you know.
Oh, go ahead, James. Sorry.
Yeah, it's definitely awesome to see Kopitar and Brown, you know, the team leaders, leading again and leading by example and production and bringing it when the Kings need them the most. You know, Kopitar and Brown were the reason why the Kings squeaked out a victory against you know, our rival Anaheim. They're back to playing at a star level again. Which is awesome. Gabrick, he in only 20 games of action, he's right up there on pace with the scoring leaders of the team. So he's bringing it, and he was the reason why the Kings snapped out of that 7 losses in 8 games slump. The return of Gabrick has really re-energized the Kings at that point of the season. And I think with Iafallo, if there's any player that the 1 week bye week is going to help, it's going to be Iafallo. He's going to recharge his battery. I know he's been a healthy scratch the past few games. So if anybody benefits from the bye week, it's going to be him. But yeah, I too share Sarah's concern about Fantenberg. You know, Fantenberg was thought to be almost a Voinov replacement, like an offensively skilled blue line player that could bring some speed to the blue line. But over the course of the season, it seems that the Kings have preferred to have a tough physical blue line identity, which has made Fantenberg oftentimes invisible and unnecessary to the Kings' plans. For that reason, I am concerned about Fantenberg's longevity in this team, because he might not fit with the identity of the blue line.
Yeah, and there's a lot to consider when it comes to Oscar. I mean, he, I think more than any other defenseman, has been sort of all over the map when it comes to the amount of ice time he's getting. He's played games where he's gotten, you know, 18, 19, 20 minutes. He's been, if not a fourth defenseman, at least a strong fifth defenseman. And then, you know, he has one game like he did against Calgary where he sort of gets run over and his ice time gets limited, and next thing you know, he's not in the lineup the next game. Maybe it's a consistency issue. Maybe it's that the Kings feel that someone like McDermott is more able to impact a game if they're not scoring, if they're not chipping in. And we've seen that a lot in the past with those sort of, you know, bottom pair defensemen that offer a little more offensive spark, where if they're not scoring, if they're not getting pucks on net, if they're not carrying the puck effectively, then, you know, the need isn't there, I guess. But yeah, McDermott, it's going to be interesting. There's, you know, whether Paul Ledoux is the guy that comes back up, whether Kevin Gravel returns after the bye week, after he's gotten a couple games in Ontario. They got options. So it's kind of nice from that regard that they're not going to be totally, you know, trying desperately to find a defenseman to fill in on the bottom pair. Granted, they could try to find somebody via trade who can be a fourth defenseman. You can maybe move Derek Forbert down and give him a larger role on the third pair. But it's going to be interesting to see what the approach is. I was going to ask what the biggest disappointment was as part of the run of you know, mid-season review honors, I guess. But yeah, it's hard to find one when you're talking about just, oh yeah, I don't think that McDermott has been that great, or I think that Iafallo should have scored more goals considering, you know, where he was at the start of the season. I think the only guy who falls in that category, before we talk about all the guys who have exceeded expectations, is Tanner Pearson. And Pearson, I don't think he's had a bad season. His possession numbers are great. He's still offering a spark. He's been, you know, a contributor in various areas. He's getting more ice time this year, but I think the goal count has been below where people have expected it to be. Sarah, are you? I know Pearson had a couple goals the other night against, I think it was Calgary. Do you think that Pearson's going to have a stronger second half? Do you think he's still going to cede most of the scoring to Tyra Toffoli? What are your thoughts?
I'd like to think that he bounces back. I feel like he's been – I feel like they're all just so streaky. And he, you know, last year he had a, you know, a really good season. And, you know, Tyler Toffoli, like, they're just this weird, like, symbiotic pair where one has a good year and the other one doesn't. You know, and this year, you know, last year Toffoli was hurt a lot. And so, you know, Pearson kind of picked up on, you know, some of the points that they weren't getting from, you know, Tyler Toffoli when he was hurt. This year, yeah, I feel like he's been in the right places. It's not like he's playing poorly, which is kind of, you know, with the exception of those like really awful periods, like that one in Calgary, you know, most of the losses haven't been because the team or individual players are not doing well. It's just they're a goal short. And I kind of feel like it's the same thing for him where he's doing all the right things. He's getting to the net. You know, he's not taking ridiculous penalties, so he's not on the ice or anything. He just isn't having any luck. I didn't pull up, like, stats or anything, but I'm going to guess his shooting percentage is probably down or he's not taking as many shots as usual. And maybe it's just, you know, adjusting to the new role, adjusting to, you know, he has a new contract now, and so trying to, you know, like everyone last year with Andre Kopitar and his new contract and, you know, is the pressure of, you know, the role for you now too much for you? You know, maybe it's psychological. I think he'll get there. It's not like I'm watching him and being like, you're completely out of place. What's wrong with you? You know, I put him on my fantasy team and then I benched him and then he scored some goals again. I think he'll get there. I think it's just the season is just not his season, maybe.
Yeah, well, I jumped ahead of you a little bit on that one. And real quick, he does have an 8.6% shooting percentage, which is not, you know, it's about league average, but it is well below what Pearson has done in the past. James, you wanted to add something?
Yeah, and Sarah, you hit the nail on the head. And I know John Rosen has described this in detail. It is market correction. Pearson's shot percentage has been higher than average throughout his young NHL career. So, you know, it's bound to happen eventually. If you know, in basketball, if you hit, 100 free throws in a row, you know, you're bound to miss one eventually. So, you know, this is going to happen. It's like, you know, Jonathan Quick. Do we blame Jonathan Quick, you know, when a shutout streak of 200 minutes ends? No. I mean, yeah, it's going to happen where, you know, people ebb and flow. If you look at Pearson's assists, right now we're halfway. If you look at Pearson's assists, he has 17 assists. That puts him almost at last year's level of 20 assists, and the year before that he had 21. So he's doing very well, exceeding expectations in the assist department. It's just that, you know, people like me expected him to score, you know, close to 30 goals this season, and, you know, wow, you know, how criminal that Pearson isn't able to, you know, meet such lofty expectations I had of him. And the only reason I had those expectations is because I didn't expect them coming out of Kopitar and Brown and Gavrik. So that level of production has been offset by the bounce back of those three. You know, Pearson is too skilled, you know, for us to give up on him. It could be that he hasn't benefited from another fast line mate named Jeff Carter. Hopefully with the return of Jeff Carter, that can boost his offense as well. Can we talk about Trevor Lewis?
Yes, we can talk about Trevor Lewis. I was ready for that.
Know, after several years.
When do we not want to talk about Trevor Lewis?
If Kopitar and Brown are the surprise of the season, I mean, Trevor Lewis is also up there as the surprise of the season. After 9 years, I believe, of scoring single-digit goals, he's finally producing like the first-rounder he is. You know, he was a mid-level first-round draft pick when he first started. So, you know, to see him finally hitting, you know, double-digit goals, and it's only halfway into the season, so, hey, he might have a chance at 20. You know, when you're a first-rounder, you got to – You must at least come close to scoring, you know, 20 each season, you know, it's kind of a shame that you know, Trevor Lewis has been underutilized over the course of his career. He's been, you know, humble enough to accept the utility role, but it's nice to finally see him, you know, emerge as a secondary option, you know, for the Kings, one of many secondary options.
Yeah, and I, like, don't know, you know, I've had my doubts about whether he's going to keep it up, but he's, like, I mean, if you're talking about shooting percentages, for him, yes, 12% is really high, but in a team context, it's below where Kopitar, Gaborik, Brown, Toffoli, and Kempe are at. Like, he's not totally out of the equation here. Like, this is something that could continue. Could he hit a slump? Absolutely. Is he going to get less ice time when Carter comes back? Sure. But he's looking the part of a guy who is going to be a secondary scorer. I mean, he gets the puck in a dangerous area against Nashville and just buries it past Rene, who had been, to that point, you know, stopping a lot of shots. So it's, yeah, I don't know. I'm excited for this Trevor Lewis. If he's still playing third line minutes, that's a huge boost to have if you've got, you know, your Kempe and Lewis maybe together on the third line once Carter comes back. That's two guys who so far this year have been really effective.
Yeah, and you mentioned Kempe. He's filled in beautifully. He's exceeded all our expectations, mm-hmm. He's scoring. He's filled in admirably for Carter. You know, if you need a moment where, you know, somebody, you know, takes the puck and handles it with skill and scores, it's going to be Adrian Kempe, like you did, you know, taking the puck away from DK Subban the other night and just burying it. Is nice to see his prowess in the shootouts. We've already been spoiled by that. That game against Ottawa where he stole the puck, you know, from behind the red line, and 99% of people in the world would just shoot it directly at the goalie, but he had the poise and the patience to just hang on a few more seconds to get the goalie to open up, then bury it. Oh, that was a rookie showing veteran style play. So I have so much hope for Adrian Kempe. He's emerged beautifully. One concern I have, though, is Johnny Brodzinski. He was supposed to be kind of the number two best prospect that we had on this team, but he hasn't quite had any spark or a consistent level of production yet. So hopefully this AHL assignment in the bye week is gonna help him.
I feel like he's kind of in a weird spot because he seems like one of those players who probably needs – he's not going to flourish on a fourth line if he is the scorer and the player that we think he is based on his college and his AHL career. And he's the kind of guy who's probably best served by top 6 minutes, but there aren't any. You know, that we don't – there's not really, like, a place to plug him in. He's not a center, so he couldn't be – you know, he couldn't plug into that, you know, Jeff Carter role. Really the only kind of spot is that left wing by, you know, to Kopitar's left wing. I'd be real curious to see what he could do if he were given more than a handful of minutes a night to really just kind of let him loose. And yeah, there is inconsistency to his game. But he just has such a great shot. He has, like, good hands, and I don't think he's being put in a position to succeed. And it's not entirely anyone's fault. Like, there's just not room for him in a role that he's going to be great at. You know, he's not a grinder. He's not a, you know, let's hunt down the puck and keep the other guys away from it player. So I think he's just, I feel like he's stuck in a numbers game of, you know, just where do you put him? But hopefully, you know, he'll go back to Ontario this week, score a bunch of goals, and come back, you know, again to LA, feeling a little more confident in his game at least, and then go from there.
Yeah, and I'm interested to see where Iafallo goes on that thread, because he's, you know, he's going to be a 12-minute, 13-minute guy now for the foreseeable future. Is that going to be a problem for him the way it was for Brodzinski? I think Brodzinski got a couple games with Kopitar at the end of last season, and he played reasonably well, and I think that's a lot of the reason we were so excited. It was like, well, maybe he's going to slot in occasionally higher up in the lineup and use his shot and, you know, I guess take some shots. But it's, yeah, it's a nice-ish problem to have. I know this has always been the deal with the Kings. They put Matt Molson on the top line when he was a rookie, and he flourished, and everybody was excited for his future, and they moved him down the lineup. He didn't do anything. They got rid of him, and, well, he's still in the NHL. So I think we're definitely nitpicky, but with this team where we're not used to so many higher end guys all sort of thriving at the same time, it is fair to look down the lineup a little bit. That's why we get mad about Adrian Kempe taking penalties, because, you know, what else are we gonna pick on for him? Where he, you know, we thought, you know, oh, he's not as good on faceoffs and he's a little undisciplined, but when he's aggressive enough to take the puck from PK Subban and score, then, you know, you deal with it, I think. So, go ahead, James.
Well, undisciplined, I mean, at least that's him trying to make some hockey plays. Undisciplined is when Drew Doughty gets mad at the ref and slams against plexiglass and gets an additional 2-minute penalty that turns out being the decider. You know, after beautifully killing 2 full minutes of 2-man disadvantage, then, you know, toward the waning seconds of that penalty, they score, and turns out that's the difference in the game. You know, that to me, that's just downright unacceptable. I mean, that's grounds for. I know the Kings have talked to him about that issue. I know he's a very passionate guy, but and he loves, you know, the passion is his passion for the game is contagious. But that's the kind of stuff that, you know, causes you to drop the A out of your jersey, you know, because that by definition is not leadership. So that's all I got to say about that.
Yeah, I mean that was disheartening. I was at the game on Saturday, and obviously the crowd was very upset, especially after Brown got knocked over and tripped Turris on his way down. But it was Martinez and Forward and Bolin on that penalty kill, and I was really impressed by all of them on that PK, and it's killer when you make that sort of an effort for 3 minutes and 41 seconds and you're still, like, one well-placed slap shot away from all of that being for basically nothing. And it's something we've put up with for Doughty for a long time. And, you know, again, like, Kempe's penalties or, like, you know, Andrei Kopitar not being the fastest guy. It's something you put up with because of the rest. I don't know. It's Dustin Brown's been wearing an A, and he's certainly lived up to it. I assume they would just keep all three guys on a rotating basis as assistants for the rest of the season. But I don't know. Let's talk about Dustin Brown, because we earlier in the season were thinking of it as sort of, you know, maybe Brown and Kopitar and Iafallo were clicking, and maybe Kopitar is just sort of carrying the play, and it's become evident that Brown is in his own right really playing well. I think his scoring has dropped off a little bit in recent games, but he is with or without Kopitar, he's still got more energy. He's still winning the shot attempt battle every night, whereas a lot of the Kings are sort of up and down. He's been very consistent. Sarah, Dustin Brown is 33 years old. What do you make of this?
Is he held together by, like, duct tape and wire and, like, adamantium? Like, I always forget that he, I just forget that he is, that quote-unquote old, and that he's been in the league for so long. I don't know. I just don't know how he does it. Constantly leading, like, the team and the everything in hits, and, you know, we can talk all day about whether or not that's a good thing or a bad thing, but for, you know, better or worse, that's, like, the Kings' identity is Dustin Brown at the end of the day, is that big, gritty, physical player who's also going to go and score a goal eventually. I've loved seeing him kind of let loose this year, and, you know, basically we're all watching him rediscover a love of this game. And so he has definitely exceeded my expectations this season, because my expectations were basically like, I hope he shows up and scores some goals every so often and doesn't, like, accidentally maim someone. Like, that's about it. And so I've really enjoyed watching him this year and really enjoyed the, like, consternation of the entire internet whenever they're like, Dustin Brown actually good? Because just everyone thinks of him as kind of a borderline goonish kind of guy. And I always joke that I knew my transformation to a Kings fan was complete once I started defending Dustin Brown to people who were talking some crap to him.
Definitely complete.
I was like, don't you say that about Dustin Brown. So I just pleased with his season, and I don't know how much longer he can keep it up, because I don't know how he stands every day, but I hope he can.
And the durability is really kind of stunning when you look at it in a list of seasons. Like, since the lockout, he hasn't missed more than 4 games in a season in the last 12 seasons, which this one is number 13. And it's sort of an underappreciated part of the equation, especially since the last few years we were wondering, well, why are we so sick of, you know, Dustin Brown? It's because we were seeing him every single night, rain or shine. And I hope it continues. I don't want to assume anything, but it's definitely, I think, been probably if we talk about the biggest surprise, Trevor Lewis already having 10 goals is way up there. But this is, after the last 5 seasons, it's sort of really unexpected.
Yeah, and if I may.
Yep.
Yeah, Dustin Brown, you know, if you consider Andrzej Kopitar to be the archetype of the team, you know, like the model at which his teammates should emulate, you know, a big man that can possess the puck heavily and do a little bit of everything. Dustin Brown is more the identity of the team, you know, the grit, the annoyer opponents, you know, never giving up, you know, being physical, hitting, you know, taking out the garbage, you know. And when you travel out of town and talk to hockey fans, you mentioned Dustin Brown, it's like, oh, you know, the moans and groans I hear, the frustration, you know, especially, you know, Phoenix fans and Chicago fans, you know, they love to bag on Dustin Brown, and it just gives you an evil smile when you know that Dustin Brown has been the difference, you know, for the Kings for so many years. And I think this year, he's lightened up on the hitting. You're not seeing so much, you know, bone-jarring, game-altering checks from him. Instead, you know, John Stevens has said openly, if the Kings lead the league in net challenges, you know, goals reversed due to challenge, that's fine. And I think Dustin Brown has taken that to heart. He's always up in front of the net, creating traffic, allowing his teammates to score. He cleans up the garbage a lot. I think the things that didn't click for the Kings and Brown the last few years because of their goal scoring drought, the drought has been ending, and as a result, things have been clicking for Dustin Brown as well.
Yeah, and I think there's definitely a valid point there, James, with the hitting, because he's definitely still taking the body. He's never stopped doing that, but he's playing an extra 5 minutes a night this year compared to past seasons, and four seasons or so. And that doesn't seem like something that you can just sort of leap to without either, reserving yourself a little bit more or playing a little smarter. And he's certainly not reserving himself in terms of getting to the front of the net. So whether it's picking his battles, whether he's a wily veteran now, or whether it's just that, playing with Kopitar is every night is still allowing him to get a little bit of the attention taken off of him. For whatever reason, it's been working. And I commented that the scoring had slowed down. It has a little bit, but since the beginning of December, he's got 11 points in 16 games. That's
self-correction,
because I'm so happy about that.
Well, he has 3 goals and 3 assists in the last 10 games, which puts him right up there. Toffoli is the leader with 4 mm-hmm. goals and 4 assists in the last 10 games. If anyone has slowed down a little bit, it's Kopitar. He's 1-5. The attention's on Kopitar. When Brown's line mates shoot, he's in front of the net and he takes out the garbage, and that's his play. He's not gonna handle the puck with skill and do a fancy move the way Kempe and Carter can do, but his job is taking out the garbage, like I said last time, scurrying around like a little rat and figuring out how to annoy the opposition. That's his style. He's just as big as Kopitar, but he plays like a small annoying rat, and which is what we love.
Oh, so much. And if we can talk about Toffoli, the last few games, granted he had 3 points against Vancouver, and that's been the bulk of his scoring in the last couple weeks. But just looking now, he's finally, after, 4 seasons of me thinking after every game, why isn't Tyler Toffoli playing more? He's actually down in terms of average ice time again this year, but the last few weeks he's regularly been, 17 to 19 minutes. The last 6 games or so, he's averaging 18 minutes. So, and that's, I think it's hard to play Toffoli more when you have so much of Kopitar and Brown out there, but, Toffoli's been, for all intents and purposes, the number 3 forward on this team. I don't know, Sarah, do you think that's where he belongs? Do you still want to see more Tyler?
I could always see more Tyler Toffoli.
Sorry, that was
but
a softball.
I think also too, the thing about the ice time is curious is that I know that they've said that they haven't been playing him as much or at all on the penalty kill this year. Just kind of about shuffling around and getting, some other guys out there. So he's, doing all this ice time while actually playing it in situations where he can make an impact on the score sheet and make an impact offensively. I know he was a fairly regular fixture on the penalty kill in past years. And so that's great that they have trusted his, defensive abilities, because I feel like, especially when he first was coming up, that's always the knock on younger players is that they don't know how to defense. They've trusted him with that. And this year, there's been some quotes from John Stevens saying, it's not about, not trusting him on it. They know he does a good job. They just want to reserve him for other situations. So it's been interesting to see that, his ice time is still that high. Discounting the fact that he's not getting another couple minutes, maybe 2-3 minutes a night on the penalty kill, because we all know that we're spending a lot of time on the penalty kill when we shouldn't be.
That's a really interesting point, Sarah, because during the Daryl Sutter era, the presumption was that, we're all interchangeable parts and we're all supposed to play 200-foot games and we're all supposed to be really heavy hitting and big on checking and, dominate possession, So as a result, I think that's why, Toffoli was asked to play, just as heavily on defense and the penalty kill as much as everybody else was. But, you know, if you ask, you know, who we should place on the penalty kill, I don't think Toffoli, you know, is one of the names that you put, you know, high up on that list. You know, so it's a good thing that John Stevens has made a decision to, you know, specialize Toffoli as an offensive player, and which is what we were excited about when he first came into the league. He's a pure scorer. I've made this basketball analogy before. I think he's a pure shooter, like in basketball, like someone mm-hmm. like a Klay Thompson in the Warriors, or Derek Fisher, you know, somebody to pass it out to, you know, for the open long distance shot. Toffoli's not really a slasher like Kobe, Steph Curry, you know, people that can dribble and generate their own offense by, you know, outspeeding everybody on the dribble. Toffoli's not that guy. But if you pass the puck to him when he's open, he's going to bury it, you know, like that .4 shot against the Boston Bruins. So I think it's good that they're placing him in situations where he's going to succeed. He's leading the team in goals this year. He's at 18, which puts him on pace for 36. So he's going to beat 30 once again, which is awesome. It's great to see him put in a position to succeed. Is he going to take over as the number one option? I don't think we're quite there yet, but it's great to see him as a maybe in between one and two option.
Yeah, and you can't argue with the strategy. I mean, I you know, Toffoli was never a bad penalty killer. I think he led the NHL in shorthanded goals a few years back. But it's clear that with the PK, the way it's been, I do need to dig in the stats a little bit more. And I know that Jonathan Quick has been, you know, elevating the penalty kill unit on his own, and we'll get to that too. But, I mean, when you have you still have Kopitar and Brown, you have Nick Shore as a really well, you know, trusted penalty killer. And there are certainly other, you know, Trevor Lewis is still Trevor Lewis. You're right. That's if you're going to save Tyler Toffoli for more offensive roles, if you can put him out there as soon as the PK is over and hope that you can take advantage of, you know, some momentum off a successful kill, then yeah, absolutely. It's hard to argue with the strategy. I think we've gone through pretty much all the forwards except maybe for Shore and for Gabrick and for some of the part-time guys. Shore is actually leading the team in the Corsi 4 percentage among forwards. He's leading in defensive zone starts, and he is third in possession behind Pearson and Brown. So he's having another Nick Shore season, which is to say that he's providing strong 200-foot play, even if the points aren't quite there. So far, he's got 11 points in 39 games, which for him would be on pace for a career high. But, you know, it's what we expect from him, and it's why we like him too. And then Gabrick has come back pretty strong from his injury. He's, you know, got an elevated shooting percentage, but he's always got an elevated shooting percentage. And he's fitting in well, playing 15 minutes a night and managing to put points up. He's got 7 goals in 20 games, so that's you know, your 20 to 25 goals, you hope, over a full season, which isn't bad for someone at his age with his history. James, final thoughts on the offense going forward before we turn our attention to the goalies and to the maybe one final look at the defense.
I just hope that they start out faster. I think that's been the knock on them this season and last. You know, it seems that mm-hmm. they're digging a few too many holes and then relying on a hot second or third period to catch up and beat opponents. Well, it doesn't quite always work. I mean, that's why we have, fortunately, in most of these games, you know, they haven't been flat out outmatched, you know, except for the one period in Calgary, the one period in Vegas, and then against you could say the Nashville game was maybe not too hot of a start, but they've been they've been right there. You know, it's just you once again, you can't underestimate how close these games are. You know, if even the Edmonton game, you know, it looked like a 5-0 blowout, but you know, in the beginning stages, Edmonton had some wide open net chances that they didn't bury. If they buried those, that even that game might have been different. So you gotta appreciate how close these games are. You know, I've knocked Nick Shore a lot, you know, for being the same age as Toffoli and Pearson, but producing nowhere near as much. But you know, I think that's where the Kings are placing him as the defensive forward role. You know, if he's going to lead the team in defensive zone starts and, you know, play that role and be successful in it, then that's, you know, that's where we need him to be. I know fans have called for Andy Andreoff to be off the roster. I have disagreed with that. I still believe that old school hockey principles still apply. While Clifford was out, if Andreoff is out, then you're looking at cheap shots on Kopitar and re-injuring Gabrick. It's as simple as that. So I think I wish he scored more, you know, when he had the puck in front of the net. He finally did once, which is great. No, Andreoff is not dead space, as many fans like to believe. Jokinen was an excellent trade. Camilleri, he pretty much said he didn't want to play third and fourth line. So trade for a player that is willing to play third and fourth line. He's fit in nicely in various roles with the team. So that's great.
I still am not, you know, around on Andreoff, but it's been, you know, the various, you know, the usual carousel of fourth liners. No one has really been all that impressive. I think Clifford's had a pretty good run since he came back. I think he's been more effective than he's been in past season. But, you know, Jokinen has been, you know, hit and miss. I've liked a lot of his games, and now he's been a little quiet recently. You talk about, like, the Kings, you know, trading Nick Dowd and sending Brodzinski back and forth and figuring out what to do with Eiffel. I think I haven't hated Andreoff's play. I think that he still leaves a lot to be desired, but he's had some, you know, he's been like a lot of the fourth liners. I think when he's been playing with Mitchell and with Brodzinski, they've had games where they've been, you know, really solid, and they've had games where they've just been abject disasters. So maybe the consistency isn't going to be there, but you know, I'm willing to leave him on the roster, even if I don't want him in the lineup ahead of everybody. I think that it makes sense if you're switching him in and out with someone like Brodzinski, who I think is streaky and who hasn't really earned that spot so far this year. Sarah, any thoughts on either that or just the forward group as a whole before we move on?
Yeah, I mean, I think Andreoff, kind of the discussion around Andreoff, mediocre or bad or whatever, for me falls into the same category of, wow, we're sitting here dissecting Curtis McDermott and Alex Iafallo. Like, if your team's biggest problem is your fourth line left wing, that means you're doing pretty well. Like you, I could take or leave Andreoff. Like, I still watch him sometimes, and I don't really know what he's contributing other than, like, being physically present. But that goal still feels like they stuffed someone else in his jersey, because I didn't think he, like, that was a very nice looking goal that he scored that other day. And, you know, the goalie to let that in, like, shouldn't really feel bad, because it was nice looking. But yeah.
Oh yeah. That's 2-on-1. Yeah.
Yeah. If he's our biggest problem, and if he's the biggest thing we can find to complain about and nitpick over, especially, you know, they love him. That team loved it. Like, John Stevens always says, like, the nicest thing about Andy Andreoff. And I'm like, you know, I usually agree with John Stevens on just about everything he talks about, but I'm like, are we talking about the same guy? Like, but yeah, I can't, you know, if they're going to rotate between him and Cal Clifford in that role, fine. Like, I'd rather it be them than wasting, you know, some kid from Ontario who isn't going to excel in that role. You know, they both know their job is get pucks, hit guys, you know, don't let the puck go in your own net. And they're fine, whatever. It would be nice to see them kind of get into a consistent rotation in that fourth line of, you know, who's going to be playing. Because I think if they can really develop more chemistry together, they'll, you know, whoever those three guys are will be a more formidable fourth line to go out there. But, you know, like I said, if that's the worst of our problems, I'm not concerned.
Sure. I think, James, if you have one final thought.
Oh, just one more final thought. Yeah, I think Torrey Mitchell has made some noise. You know, his career has been largely quiet, you know, over many years. But, you know, 5 points, 15 games, you know, he can win faceoffs. The shooting percentage has been quite high. I think he's been making some noise. So that's helped the Kings' third and fourth line as well.
Yeah, he's been falling into the Jordan Nolan department for me, where I don't know if he's necessarily better than the other guys that they're, you know, trotting out there every night, but he's been more noticeable for me. Like, I'm picking out one or two good things he does every game, which, you know, Nolan was sort of a horse on roller skates a lot of the time, just sort of zooming around the ice. I have no idea if that's a good analogy or not, but I think Mitchell, I think, has been, since the trade at least, he's offered some spark from, you know, a spot that you don't always get spark from. Cool. So let's go ahead and switch gears then. I do want to talk about the defense real quick before we move on. We've talked a little bit about Doughty. I don't think there's too much to say about Drew Doughty that hasn't already been said by everyone else in the way he's, you know, continues to eat minutes and the way, aside from, you know, the occasional unsportsmanlike conduct penalty, he's just been rock solid every night. He's again, I think, either leading the team or leading the defenseman in plus minus. It's with, you know, we've seen Martinez and Muzzin bounce back and forth in terms of the goals that they're giving up on any given night, or the at least season to season, their ability to keep pucks out of net. And Doughty, it's just sort of been the usual story. Martinez has been an interesting case because he's had a completely different season than he did last year. Last year, he was on the ice for 54%. The Kings got 54% of the shot attempts when he was out on the ice, but they were giving up goals regularly and couldn't really, you know, buy any luck. And this season, Martinez is actually one of the lower defensemen on the team. They're at about 46%. Corsi 4 percentage when Martinez is out there, but he's gotten much better goal numbers, and granted, everybody else on the team has too. Even poor old Jake Muzzin has managed to get on the good end of the goals this season. But I don't know what to make of Martinez, because his shot blocking is again near the top of the Kings, if not the league. He's by the eye test, I don't think he's looked particularly bad. And maybe it's just because he's spent more minutes with guys like McDermott or whoever, you know, maybe a rotating set of guys that are skating with him every night. Sarah, I guess we'll start with you. Do you have any strong opinions about Alec Martinez at this point? Or do you like sort of the role that he's been placed in to this point?
You know, I feel like this is the first year that I've actually noticed him being like the shot blocking guy. And maybe it's just because it's more of a talking point this year with kind of the broadcast and media and everything, that they've really pointing it out. And, you know, being in Chicago and having spent so many years watching, you know, the Blackhawks and watching, you know, Nicholas Hjalmarsson play, you know, I certainly have an appreciation for that guy. you know, who's the guy to get in the way of stuff. And, you know, it's not a role that I actually envision him as, but, you know, watching his game, I was like, oh yeah, that is him. It's good to see him and Muzzin both having a bounce back year after the disaster that was last year, where they were both like, I don't have the stats in front of me, but I think it was something like negative a million each. It's good
give
to see
take.
Them both having, yeah, give or take a couple. It's good to see them both having more, you know, just better years. I would be interested to know what it would be like if he was not paired with Curtis McDermott, who, you know, I think one of the big strengths of Alec Martinez's game is that he is, you know, a pretty good skater and he's a, you know, pretty speedy guy. I always make fun of him in the respect that one of the first Kings games I went to, I was like, you know, the Kings were coming back to defend their zone, and I was like, who is that poor forward going back there? Like, why did the defenseman, like, you know, abandon, you know, Jake Muzzin? Like, why, who's back there having to cover? And I was like, oh, that's Alec Martinez. Like, you know, just, you know, because he's usually so, like, jumped up in the play, you know, being sometimes like a fourth forward, maybe doesn't skate backwards that swiftly all the time. But, you know, pairing him with a guy who's, you know, a little bigger, a little slower, well, a lot bigger, Curtis McDermott is huge. You know, pairing him with someone who their playing styles might not necessarily complement each other. I think, you know, if you go back and look at goals that they give up where they're both on the ice, you know, is he trying to cover for his rookie partner? Is he out of position because he's trying to be in two places at once? So I think that maybe some of his game this year has changed from just adjusting to a new guy. But I mean, he's playing that, you know, middle defenseman role that he has been holding down for a while now, and, you know, no complaints here.
Yeah, and Martinez has spent, just for the sake of looking it up, Martinez has spent about a third of his even strength ice time this season with McDermott. He spent about a third with Muzzin and a third with various other guys, mostly forward. And the results with McDermott actually aren't too much worse in terms of shot attempts. But with McDermott, Martinez is getting mostly offensive starts, whereas with other guys, he's playing a lot more in the defensive zone. The goal margins aren't particularly bad with McDermott either. They've been even together, so 7 goals for in their 200-plus minutes, 7 goals against. James, you can either talk about Martinez more, or you can turn your attention to Muzzin. I'll let it be Dior's choice. But behind Doughty, what do you think the performance has been like?
Well, I'm looking at these stats right now, and I didn't know Muzzin has 20 assists. That puts him third on the team behind only Kopitar and Doughty. So, you know,
yeah.
If you were to go back to the beginning of the season and say, you know, hey, would you expect Muzzin to have 20 assists? Would you expect both Martinez and Muzzin to be, you know, at a plus in the plus-minus column? If you knew that would happen, then we would say, hey, that's a success. That's a bounce back on the part of both players. I think with Muzzin, you know, he's been quietly doing well. I know fans love to make fun of him because, you know, he has a lot of absent-minded moments, you know, that stand out. But, you know, they don't compliment when he contributes very solidly to the team. And I know they've experimented with reuniting him with Doughty, you know, so whoever – as we know, whoever plays with Doughty does very well, and then some. So that's helped him as well. Martinez, the shot blocking, yeah, that has been a phenomenon. He hasn't been as glamorous this year, and I think it's because we haven't he's failed to entertain us with his overtime heroics like he has in previous years. And I'd like to see him jump on the offense a little more, but, you know, he has done admirably, you know, playing still on the wrong side and playing with the less experienced players on the team. Also, you know, the Fantenbergs and the Follens have put in some pretty solid minute amounts, which has lessened the Kings' need to, you know, depend so much on Muzzin and Martinez, and even Doughty as well. So it's been, you know, I think by definition, both Martinez and Muzzin have bounced back. I think breaking them apart has definitely been the right step to take.
So. Yeah, and I think I agree with you there. I don't know if it's just some bad voodoo from last year, but this year, yeah, Muzzin and Martinez, that is, together has been worse than last year in terms of possession. It couldn't have gotten worse in terms of the goal department. So they've improved there, but yeah, I think Muzzin's really benefited from Doughty, of course, but also with Christian Follen, I think that pairing has been pretty effective, which I might not have guessed. Two larger guys, neither with, you know, game breaking speed, but they've been fairly effective, except that they're not having the best goal luck together, but they just have in 120 minutes together, they've got one goal. The Kings have one goal with them on the ice together. So from an offensive perspective, they're not doing very well. I think Follen has been a pretty positive addition in his own zone. I think the PK has obviously done fairly well with him out there. And I think he's the one guy of that sort of rotating set of guys behind Doughty and Muzzin and Martinez and Forbert that has sort of staked his claim to be in there almost every night.
If you say Doughty's a lock for the All-Star game, you know, and he's producing 7 goals and 23 assists so far, you know, then that means, you know, Jake Muzzin has, you know, quietly been producing, you know, almost All-Star numbers, which is very impressive. You know, he's on pace for 40 assists. So, and it helps that the Kings are scoring more. You know, the drought has been lessened, and it's helping the plus minus figures for the defense. So, you know, the fact that the Kings are scoring more, you know, helps the defense look better as well, because, you know, that means they get credit for a few assists here and there, and, you know, their plus minus rating goes up. So, the defense does seem a little thin still, you know, because we do have that rotating, you know, cast of the bottom three defensemen, you know, which is always an uncertain question, kind of like the third and fourth line. But, Sarah, I think I know what Sarah's going to say next. If we're complaining about the bottom three, then I think we're in good shape.
Sarah?
You got me. I know there's been like the media reports saying that, you know, if there's anything they're looking for in a trade, it might be like a 4 or 5 defenseman. And I would, depending on what the price is, I don't know that I'd object to that, you know, getting a little more. You know, if you want to go into the playoffs with, you know, veteran experience and guys you can trust, you know, I don't think it's a bad thing to explore. But, you know, if they go into the end of the season and after the trade deadline with this same group of guys that they have, like, you know, it's not the worst thing in the world. There's not a gaping hole of someone who I see out on the ice every night being like, oh, that's a goal against, just waiting to happen. You know, I think that they have pretty good confidence in all the guys that they have. But, you know, if there's a chance to tweak something, fine. But if not, just roll with it.
Yeah, and we don't talk about Derek Forbert much either as the number four defenseman. But his ice time has actually gone up this year. He's playing 21 minutes a night, which is a really quiet 21 minutes a night. And he's on pace for most of the same totals he had last year. Still not, you know, scoring goals, but if you're asking Derek Forbert to score goals, you're in trouble. He's been getting more defensive assignments this year and not, you know, really been, you know, thriving with all of them, but he's been hanging on, and he's been playing reasonably well in his own zone. The goal numbers, at least the goals for, goals against numbers, are still pretty solid. And I don't know if he's a fourth defenseman on a cup-winning team, but he at least has managed to justify getting the amount of ice time he has been getting.
Oh, and thank goodness for Forbert, because he too is 25 like Toffoli and Pearson, and I know Toffoli and Pearson have stole the spotlight with mid-20s players on our team, but I know fans, Robin likes to say all the time, we could have had Tarasenko. If we took Tarasenko, then, we'd be stuck putting either Gravel or Ledoux as one of the regular options for defense on this team. And we know both of them are not close to ready yet to take on such a regular role. So one of the, he's been so quiet, Forbert, which is great because, yes, although he's not taking over offensively, it also means he's not the cause why the Kings are giving up goals. He's not drawing negative attention the way, McDermott is right now, with his inability to clear the puck. Forbert, you can largely count on to do the job and make the right decisions, which is great. So, lost in the emergence of Pearson and Toffoli is also the emergence of Derek Forbert as a regular player, a regular reliable player, who we thought it might never happen. He was the last first rounder of his draft class to enter the NHL. So it's great that he's emerged as a regular on this team. It takes away the need for us to trade yet another offensive prospect for defensive help.
Yeah, and I think you're right. I haven't noticed Forbert making lapses in judgment too often this year. I think against Calgary, he missed a net front assignment pretty badly. But if I'm going to pick on him for the second period of the Calgary game, then I'm going to pick on everybody for the second period of the Calgary game. I think that he's been less dependent on Doughty this year. He's still, getting pretty solid plus-minus totals, largely because he's been spending time with Doughty. But you can't blame a guy for where he ends up in the lineup. And if the Kings manage to find somebody on the cheap that can play top 4 minutes and give Forbert 16 minutes a night instead of 21, that's great. But if you're, the idea that the Kings can't put Forbert with Doughty long-term and expect to succeed, I think is going by the wayside. And maybe that's Doughty's brilliance, or maybe that's just that Forbert is coming into his own a little bit.
Well, that's Forbert's credit for being the one that is picked to play alongside Doughty. I mean, you can argue that Vandenberg can Vandenberg might be an all-star, with his offense if he plays against Doughty, or maybe Follin can be, Follin can emerge if he plays against Doughty. But the Kings are picking Forbert to play with Doughty, so that's a credit to his reliability to be the one to play the top D pairing minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's I think that's the defensive roundup. We'll see what the Kings decide to do with their that whole unit after the break. But I think it doesn't matter as much as we thought it might, which is a credit to the Kings managing to keep pucks out of the net even with the different style of play. And a lot of that, I think, is down to Jonathan Quick, too. And Darcy Kuemper, who's had a really solid season despite not getting too much playing time as of late. Sarah, on the subject of goaltending, do you think that Quick is going to keep up this his play? And do you think Kuemper is going to keep up his play?
Statistics and math and everything say that the probability of Quick keeping it up is low. But he basically having the whole year off with the exception of a handful of games, he's obviously rehabbing an injury, so it's not like he's just sitting around like meditating on life or whatever he does in his free time. But I feel like that he looks like a different player. I do notice as the season has gone on, he is getting a little more Jonathan Quick-like in that he's making more of those saves that make me wish I had been drinking heavily before the game. You know, those like he catches the puck and then has to like lunge to actually catch it. You know, ends up sprawled out on the ice, or these like the crazy athletic saves that look fun but mean that you probably weren't in the right place the first time around.
He's entertaining the crowd. Come on, that's good for business.
I mean, yes, but I'd like to not have a heart attack every game. And there was that one game where he got so ticked off that he took his own unsportsmanlike conduct penalty, which it's all fun and games whenever he's causing a scene and, you know, spearing Corey Perry, but whenever it's putting his team down a man, you know, much like Drew Doughty mouthing off at the refs, like, you know, you like to see fire and passion, but also maybe don't disadvantage your team.
You're not getting your money out of your Kings ticket without seeing the angry cats.
The very first game I went to, he started a brawl, and so I was very entertained. But the like rational numbers side of me is like, oh, maybe don't do that. But I mean, yeah, I love it. I love it when he gets angry. Like I hated him before I was a Kings fan because I was like, why is that goalie such a jerk? And now I'm like, please be a jerk more, especially if it's Corey Perry.
Why is he better than Crawford?
That's a whole other podcast, my friend. But I hope that, you know, maybe the bye week will be a good thing for him to kind of reset and, you know, have some time off to refresh and everything. Cause you know, I wouldn't pin any of the losses on him necessarily. Like he's not really letting in soft goals. A lot of times it's the team just failing on one defensive thing or another. But you know, will he keep up these incredibly high numbers? TBD. Darcy Kuemper, I've been impressed by. I have seen a lot of him before this year just by virtue of being in the Central and seeing a lot of Minnesota games. And he struck me as someone who, when he came, he kind of got pushed into us before Minnesota got Devan Dubnyk. Kuemper kind of got pushed into the starter's role, and you could tell he just wasn't good as a starter, but as a, you know, capable backup, you know, he certainly stole more than his share of games that I saw watching Minnesota Wild games. So I think that he can probably keep this up. I think that I'd like to see him play a little more just to have Jonathan Quick not playing 1,000 games a year, but that won't happen. But I've been impressed with him, and I think that, you know, he's been a good addition. We don't have the worries of the backup going in and, you know, are they going to blow the game or not, which is a nice, you know, a nice thing to have.
Yeah, and every season that Quick has been healthy, the entire season he's played at least, or he started at least 60 games, and he's on track for 62, 63 this season. So, which would actually be, for him, slightly off his paces of the last few full seasons. But
Eric, it's more than that. He started 34, so now he's on pace for 68. I mean, one thing I said in the preseason podcast was that, you know, any backup goalie that the Kings use would need to play at least 20% of the starts, thinking that, you know, Jonathan Quick has now become an injury risk. Well, that theory has gone out the window. I mean, John Stevens is very open about saying he's going to rely on Quick. And, you know, I don't blame him. If I were to pick a goalie in the NHL to help take me to the Stanley Cup, it's going to be Jonathan Quick. I understand other goalies lead him when it comes to, like, fancy, you know, goal save above average or quality save. Well, I don't know how they define that. Yes, other goalies have better fancy stats, but who's gonna compete? I mean, who's gonna bring it? You know, who's going to single-handedly try to win the game without scoring? It's going to be Jonathan Quick. You know, having said that, you know, Kemper is putting up slightly better numbers. 934 save percentage as opposed to 926 for Quick, 2.11 goals against average as opposed to 2.31 for Quick. I mean, these are splitting hairs at this level. They're both playing their roles at an elite level. I mean, for the sake of Quick's health, I still do want to see Darcy Kemper take more of the starts. I mean, Quick is taking almost 80% of them. So I guess John Stevens is not going to listen to me.
I don't think so. And I'd like to argue your assertion about having a goalie in the playoffs. But hey, Carey Price has been pretty rough this year. So I don't know. I think that Quick, he's had rough starts. Nashville, I don't think you can blame him for the four goals against Calgary. I don't think you can blame him for the four goals against, and he faced a ton of shots against Calgary too. So it's going to be interesting. I think the bye week is well-timed considering I think he started the last seven games. But Kemper certainly hasn't done anything to warrant not getting any time. So maybe it's just because there weren't as many back-to-backs.
Should we talk about the rest of the league our playoff chances?
Should we talk about the rest of the league
and our playoff chances?
Yeah, we got about 10 minutes left, I think. So let's I think we can do that. So in the Pacific, I guess we'll start in local. Obviously, no one was expecting Vegas to be where they are. And I think we are finally past the point where everyone's expecting Vegas to sort of fall off the pace. So that leaves, if you want to exclude Vegas from our discussion, I wouldn't be too opposed to it. But it's a logjam from 3-5 in the Pacific. San Jose, Anaheim, and Calgary are all San Jose's 5 back, Anaheim's 6 back, Calgary's 7 back. And then you have to take a bigger step down to Edmonton and Vancouver. Sarah, do you see the Kings holding on to a 2 spot and keeping home ice? Do you think San Jose or somebody else catches up with them?
San Jose's been so weird this year. Especially if you follow Sharks fans, I feel like a lot of them are acting like the whole team is dead. But, you know, they're doing very well. I could see Los Angeles slipping just because, you know, historically no team is going to admit they coast. But, you know, and the Kings are not always in a position to have a playoff spot locked down. But for some reason, January is always fairly bad for the Kings. As they get closer to the playoffs, you know, is the interest level still there in it? Maybe not. Maybe they just sort of do what they have done in the past and just say, as long as we get in, and then we see what happens. I would be surprised if they like slip down into a wild card. I would assume that it's either going to be the 2 or 3 spot. Also presuming that like all of Vegas isn't lost in like an alien abduction or something, and therefore there's no team left to play. And even then, like the kids they call up from juniors somehow will still end up being like all stars because that's how this season is going for Vegas. I think that the Kings the biggest problem has just been like the inconsistency of the, like, you know, win 3 or 4 or 5 games and then, you know, they have that one really rough period and then they drop a bunch of games. You know, if they can kind of continue being streaky like this, I could see them dropping down to the number 3 spot. But, you know, their playoff predictions are, you know, 85% locked to make the playoffs based off of this one chart. You know, I don't think they're going to drop out of the picture entirely. It's just the ranking is where the question comes in. And I don't think they care. I think as long as they're in, they're fine.
Well, this is a team that has won the cup as an 8th seed. So right. I understand that mentality. But yeah, I mean, Yeah, I'm concerned. I mean, right now, much of the success of the Kings so far has been because they've been very dominant against the Eastern Conference. But the second half of the season is going to be very division heavy, with more percentage of the games being played against division rivals. I know we've been very optimistic. We've had some pretty glowing reviews about our roster, our forwards, defense, and goalies. We've had great things to say about them. But the one thing that, a few things that prevent me from saying they're, without a doubt, that they're a cup contender, are that mm-hmm. they have not been able to solve the Golden Knights and the Sharks. And, we know we're going to face the Sharks in the playoffs, if not in the first round, the second round. And the Kings have not done very well against the Sharks this season. They've kept it close, but the Sharks have always found a way to gain that extra edge against the Kings. The Kings have done well against the Ducks. They seem to be able to have an extra edge against Anaheim, and nobody's been able to solve Vegas yet. The thing with Vegas is that everyone is talking about speed on offense. You know, that's the new NHL. But where Vegas distinguishes itself is speed on defense. When teams play against Vegas, Vegas gives them no time. I mean, you can be, like, well behind your own goal line, and, you know, Vegas is sending out a guy to rush at you to give you no time to make a decision. I mean, it just seemed that the first game against Vegas, where, you know, quick played a rare dud. It just seemed that the Kings yeah. had no time to do anything, and they had no time to establish themselves, to make passes. It just seemed like a swarm of bees buzzing all over them. But if the thing about Vegas, though, is that nobody else has been truly able to solve them. If one coach in the NHL finds a way to be able to solve them, then you know the rest of the league is going to copy, and then that's when Vegas is going to start to be vulnerable. So, you know, I'm not ready to hand the cup to Vegas yet, but I'm not ready also to say that the Kings are definitely cup contenders either. San Jose has a few games on us. I'm not worried yeah. about San Jose leapfrogging us. They always do well in the regular season. We expect that from them. I'm much more worried about Calgary. It's imperative that we keep them at bay. It's imperative that any remaining games against Calgary, you know, we must win, because those games are, you know, 4-point switches. So, we don't want them to get hot, excuse the pun. So, and they do have the capability of doing so. That's the team that we need to keep at bay.
Yeah, and I made the mistake of talking down Calgary when I was on a podcast with Nashville's SB Nation site right before we played them. So you can blame me for the way that second period went. I think Mike Smith is probably the sort of deciding factor for them, whether they can make a charge or not, because that's been the one thing that's held them back for a lot of the season. I just can't shake the feeling that Vegas is going to be losing a home game 7 in the playoffs. I know they're 18-2-1, but it just feels like it's like that Colorado season from a few years ago, and they're totally different teams, but where they exceed all expectations and then they get to, you know, a boiling point in an elimination game. And, I guess teams have to learn how to lose, right? Well, who knows with this team? I've stopped trying to guess what's going to happen.
The jury's still out on whether Vegas is – Vegas is definitely an exciting regular season team, but the jury's still out on whether they're a playoff team, that whether they're a playoff design team, whether this cast of, you know, mid-level players of every other team has what it takes to succeed in the playoffs. You know, do they have the guts to do so? Jury's still out on that. Definitely with Calgary, you know, Mike Smith is a definite upgrade over the fallible Brian Elliott. When they're on, you know, they turn up the juice, and they seem to be able to do things in brilliant spurts, you know, so that's what makes them so dangerous.
And Vegas seems well equipped to deal with injuries, and they've managed to survive the goaltending nightmare they had earlier this season. But yeah, they've gotten a pretty good health from their skaters, especially as of late. So we'll see how they deal with it if guys are starting, you know, all of these guys you assume are, and I talked to Sheng, who used to write for the site about this, a couple weeks ago, but all these guys are, you know, getting career high ice time and career high point totals and playing more than they're used to. It's going to be interesting to see if that affects them, especially if, as you said, they're so dependent on their speed and their energy. I guess just to sort of round up the real quick questions, first of all, from a league-wide perspective, in the Central, it's sort of a three-headed monster with Winnipeg, St. Louis, and Nashville as sort of the clear top three, with Dallas pushing and Colorado having a surprisingly good season too, and Minnesota and Chicago not far out. Sarah, James, I guess for each of you, is there a team in the Central that scares you?
Nashville. I feel like Nashville, historically, I mean, last year they had a terrible start to the season, and then they just rolled, you know, through the end of the year. This year, you know, they've dealt with a lot of injuries. I think, you know, Forsberg, I think, is hurt now. So that, you know, they're still, you know, they had their own kind of little slump and are still just pushing through it. Winnipeg, I just don't trust them. I don't trust that they're actually good. And they might be. They might be legit for all I know, but I've seen Winnipeg look good too often and then completely fall apart when it matters. So maybe I should be scared of them, but I'm not. Nashville's it for me in the Central.
I agree with that. St. Louis, you know, they had a hot start, but they've cooled off. So I'm not fearing them as much. Nashville, I was afraid that they would feel sorry for themselves after losing in the finals and, you know, go on a lull, kind of like the Kings did in 93-94. But they're solid. They're proving to be solid. Sarah, I want to know about Chicago. I mean, who would have expected that Chicago would be last in the division? That's one of the surprises this year.
Chicago, watching Chicago games this year is a lot like watching the Kings last year, where like the parts are there, but the big name guys and the guys who are making all the money aren't contributing, and no one can put a puck in the net, and your starting goaltender is maybe dead, and you've got a series of, you know, Jeff Glass, the 32-year-old rookie, you know, playing, and a guy from Columbus who could never quite make it in as Columbus's backup. It's a very frustrating feeling of deja vu, even though, like, if you asked me, do I really root for the Blackhawks anymore? The answer is like, I watch the games because they're here and I like to know what's happening, but whatever. But I'm like, I lived through this last season and I don't want to do it again. I think the media narrative of the Blackhawks being this like weird dynasty kind of thing has overshadowed the fact that their numbers have just been trending downward over the past couple years. They won that 2015 cup with like Duncan Keith and a couple of defensemen taped together by sheer luck. And that whole cup run, I was like, they're never going to do this. They can't, they're going to lose. And they didn't. And like after that just promptly imploded. So I think people who have watched the team,
yeah,
you know, a little more critically are not entirely surprised, but yeah, it's a rough year here in Chicago for some
plus,
fans.
Plus they have not one, but two $10 million contracts. So that's going to be a problem.
Yeah.
Oof. Well, I'm just glad, number one, that the Kings are in the Pacific, even with the division struggles, it's a better place to be. And two, that they only have one $10 million man, and he's producing like a $10 million man should. So I guess we are just about at the end. We've got 20 seconds left, so I'm just going to wrap it up here. Thanks for listening. If you're either listening live or if you're just downloading our podcast later, we appreciate it. We're hoping after the bye week to see some good Kings action and hopefully to come back with our podcast. So, James, Sarah, thanks for joining, and everybody have a good night.
Good night.